Winona Forever is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For more podcasts about movies and nostalgia, head on over to cageclub.me. Hi, I'm Lindsay Gibb.
And I'm Rekha Tulsaram.
And this is Winona Forever. Hello and welcome to the Scanner Darkly episode. I guess it's a Scanner Darkly.
Oh, yes.
So it's my turn to describe this film. It is based on a Philip K. Dick story, something.
Yes.
And that is a thing I didn't know going into this. And I actually watched it all the first time through without noticing that it, like, I didn't see it in the opening credits.
Right,
so I watched it once over, and then at, in the end when it has like a quote from him, I was like, oh, this was a Philip K. Dick story. This makes so much more sense now.
Yeah.
So I rewatched it for that reason. But it's basically a story about a guy 7 years in the future who is works for like an undercover police operation where he is... He wears like this weird suit that makes him look like all a million people at once or whatever, which I guess apparently makes him look like a blur. Though to us, it just looks really weird and distracting.
Really, really hard to look at.
And yeah, he's doing this undercover operation to do like a drug investigation. I'm trying to remember the name of the drug. Something D.
Substance D.
Substance D. So yeah, he has a bunch of friends who are, I guess, druggies, and he's kind of undercover watching them, but also doing the drug.
Yes.
And I think that's it. That's the basis
of
this story.
It's shot in, what is it called? Rotoscope?
Rotoscope.
Rotoscoping?
Rotoscoping, yes.
Oh, that was hard to look at. Like, it's like, for me, like, I already find, like, animated stuff hard to, like, watch. But this was like even like next level hard to watch.
Yeah.
Because of all the weird trippy stuff that's supposed to be happening with all the drugs and stuff. And if there's so much going on, and then Keanu's changing suit.
Yeah.
That was even like his suit is constantly changing, and he's and like
turning into different people.
And it's just constant. Like, it's supposed to be what, like 40 million people a second, or like,
right, and like, you, he never turns fully into one person. Like,
no.
He's always parts of different people. So yes,
but if you watch it, it looks like Keanu the first time they're doing
That's interesting.
And then apparently, I was reading some trivia. Like, at one point, they have Philip K. Dick in there.
Oh,
yeah,
that's very interesting.
Spliced in there. Or I don't know if they splice in these kind of...
Right.
It's not film.
It's drawn. Drawn in there, probably.
Yes.
Well, one interesting... So if we're going to just like sort of jump to a reveal, because we do spoil these movies.
Yeah.
At the end, when you discover that his boss is actually Winona Ryder, Matt... When I watched it the second time, Matt watched it with me, and he said, I wonder if that's her, and like really early. And I was like, oh my God, I figured that out like right before it was revealed, not early. And he said he knew because he like saw her as one of the like things that cycled through.
See, I'd seen this before, but I didn't really remember. And then watching it again, I forgot that she was one, but in my head, I was just like, oh, she's gonna be one, but I don't know how. Like, I didn't even like put it together that she was the boss until I was like, oh, Stoops, obviously.
Right. Stoops. I enjoyed, so the thing about the boss being shorter than him, I was picturing the boss the whole time as Alex Winters, or Winter, or whatever his name is. He's Bill in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
That's funny. Well, I could see that because the way his figure was.
Yeah.
Or her, Winona's one. It was just so funny.
Winona and Axe Winter. They're the same
person.
Well, because
they had a man, it had a man voice.
Yeah,
so,
it did.
Yeah.
Which I guess maybe all of them do.
Yeah.
Like, because they all
that's
had
a good
different
disguise,
voices,
I guess. Yeah.
But yeah, they had like one of those like robot kind of like when you're disguising someone's voice in something, like that was the type of voice that they had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was too busy picturing that. Like him as the character to even think about who it was. underneath there. Because I also don't think I originally noticed until they started discussing who are you to Keanu's character, that they didn't know who each other were. Like, I thought they were disguised for the outside world, not for each other.
Yeah, like, totally.
Yeah, you're working with people and you don't even know who they are.
Yeah, that's messed up.
It is.
It's like, and they had him, like, investigate himself, but they had to,
which was weird.
Yeah, but she had to have known. Anyway, it's so confusing.
I do think Winona always knew who he was, even though she said she eliminated and figured out who he was. Yeah. But that was because he didn't know who she was, and
it was all a big,
because she said at the, you know, when she starts to be unhappy about what she's done. I'm really jumping to the end of this movie. Fine. But I mean,
most of it's... Anyway.
But this, I think, is the, like, most Winona part of the movie,
for
too.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
she's definitely a secondary character to Keanu.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. I'll set up what I'm about to talk about. So, Keanu's hooked on this drug and presumably became hooked on the drug because he's this undercover agent.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the agency, like, fed him the drug.
Yeah, they were.
And
they
turned
kind of
him into.
They didn't
addict.
Tell him to take it, but they kind of, like, hinted at the fact that he should be taking it. And if he's going to, like, hang out with addicts, of course he's going to take it. He's not going to. And they were encouraging him to pretend to partake it and stuff. But, like,
right.
I mean, the thing was so, like, highly addictive that I think it just
they knew for sure they knew. And, like, at the end when they're telling him your mind is basically fucked now, like, you have your brain doesn't work
the
anymore.
Left and the right don't communicate and
they're just fighting with each other
whatever
so when they're when the boss, so Winona, is telling him that, she says, well, you didn't have to actually take it, like, most people pretend they're taking it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I never even thought to do that. So, which is frustrating. But then, she's, you know, when she talks to, I guess, whoever her boss is later at, like, a cafeteria or something is where they meet. She says, I can't do this anymore. I can't, like, be hooking people on drugs unknowingly. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least if he signed up for this, I'd be okay with the fact that now he's basically brain dead.
Yeah.
And being used to try and basically the point, I guess, is that they become, you know, brain dead based on taking the drug, and then they get put into this institution. It's like a rehab center something, but it's really the place that makes the drugs.
Yeah, they end up going to work at the place that makes the drugs and live in, like, a little cell.
But I guess the cops are trying to prove that that's what is actually happening behind those closed doors, because it's so closed off. But so, yeah, I figured all that out the second time watching it. I have no idea what I thought happened the first time I watched it. I'm so confused.
Same. I watched it, like, when it came out in theaters in Ottawa. And I like I said before, my only memory was Bugs, which is, like, the beginning of the movie.
The very beginning. And it doesn't really happen again.
No, it doesn't.
I was like, where are all these? Oh, right away.
I just have a bug phobia. So that was, like, the one thing I took
right
my
away.
Takeaway. I was just like, ew, so many bugs.
A lot.
Really,
there was an upsetting amount of bugs.
Yeah.
Because they were just, I mean, they were in
his mind.
Because
it was a hallucination.
Yes.
So they were everywhere, and they were not stopping. They were in his dog, and they were, you know, he put some in a jar, and then suddenly the trip was over. The jar was empty, and he's like, oh, yeah, there's no bugs.
Right. Yeah.
There were a lot of, like, funny drug trip scenes, or when they were, like, super high and freaking out and, like, what's going on here? And they, you know, nothing, like when they were in the car that and the gas pedal messes up.
Yeah,
but that's because of Barry, Robert Downey Jr. He was like, so, but Robert Downey Jr.'s character was like, he was
Barris,
like an
Barris last name, yeah.
Like an informant.
Yeah,
he was like spying on Keanu, and like
they're all spying on each other because Winona's also spying.
But he's also like, he's so like I guess substance D has taken a great hold of him, and he's super paranoid, and he thinks that Keanu's up to something. Of course he is up to something, but he's right. But anyway, he does something to his car. He fucked with the car, right?
Certainly, I imagine, because when they all look at the car, so like Woody Harrelson is in this, so it's like Woody Harrelson, Keanu, and Robert Downey Jr., they're all looking inside this car to figure out what's going on with it, and they all seem to know. Like, they all seem to understand what's going on under the hood of that car. Mm-hmm. Like, and I just am like, what chances is there that all the people in your car know how to like fix operate a car. Yeah, like not just operate it, like drive it, yeah. but like fix it, put like, it together. Yeah. Like they understood it to a level that I was like, not all three of these people would know.
No, and then but mechanics. What's really funny is that they're clearly not mechanics because remember they got that. Robert Downey Jr. got that bike from some for $50. And he's like, the guy told me it was 18 speeds and they're trying to count the gears.
How many gears it had?
They're like, oh, it's only eight. No, it's nine. You got ripped off. We got to get your money back. And they were trying to, you know, they made a whole, like, worked it all up to get their money back. But really, it was just, they didn't know anything about bikes.
Right.
Ultimately.
Totally. So, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. seems to know nothing about bikes, but he knew a lot about cars and said he had all the tools at home to, like, because you need special tools to, like, remove and put in some of the things that were missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he admits that he has those tools, which only, like, a mechanic or something would have, then probably he's the one who took it apart.
I think they were just like,
obviously. Well, and then they're in the tow truck and he's saying that he's left the front door unlocked and a note saying, come on in, because they think that somebody who's like spying on them or something is going to come into the house and he wants to like film them, but they have to come through the front door to trigger the film cameras. So, oh my gosh. But it is really funny. I do enjoy their like weird tangent conversations.
Yeah, there's something kind of realistic about like just the setting of it, like the house and these like, you know, burnouts just sitting around doing that. Like there's and I think Philip K. Dick actually based it on his friends, and that's why at the end he dedicates it to a bunch of his people.
I know, it was so
or
many
it's dedicated
people.
And then actually one of them is references Phil, and that's him.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very sad because that list of people is long and a lot of them are deceased, which I don't know if they all died from drugs, but it was the way that he framed it. Like all of these people, suffered a price higher than they should have for the things that they did or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like a lot of people like Phil, but he called himself Phil in the thing. His was like pancreatic.
Yes.
Problems or something.
Yeah, it didn't sound great.
Which I guess must be due to drugs if he's pointing to it in this context. But then all his, like a lot of his friends had brain damage. Like a lot of the people listed had brain damage. So I was like, oh, that is sad.
It's no good.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first time around, I think I like was so frustrated with the look of the film that I couldn't enjoy it.
Right.
And then the second time around I was used to the way it looked, so then I started to like actually like fall into
understand
the characters.
It. Yes.
I think I was just so mad the first round that like particularly the like bike scene, I was like, this would have been a really good scene if I could see their faces properly and like appreciate the like connections between the actors. Like I felt like they were doing good job acting.
It came out in 2006, so there was really no need to shoot it like that. Like, you could have used like,
well, they did film it. I mean, that's how they do rotoscoping. They film it.
No,
and
I know,
then,
but like, I mean, they didn't need to like do rotoscoping.
No,
like,
exactly.
They could have done the special effects in another way, and it would have been better.
Well, that's exactly what I like. That's what I mean by they did film it. So, like, why not just use the film?
Don't take that. Remove that effect. Anyway,
I don't quite understand. Like the stuff I was reading about it seemed to indicate that this was like a cheap way, like because he wanted to make it on a low budget so he had more control. And I don't really understand how adding animation to something that you've already had to film is cheaper. I would think that would be more expensive, wouldn't it?
Maybe because like they polish, like it doesn't have to be as polished. Like, I read that like Robert Downey Jr. had his lines stuck all over all the sets, but you couldn't see it because they just, you know, painted over it or whatever.
True that's true. I guess it could be acted more like a, you know, just
but like for set wise, like I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean, they still were in, like, they apparently rented like a broken down house, and that's what they
filmed
in. And
they like looked at like 30 different houses before settling on this one or something,
right?
Which is okay.
Yeah, which is whatever. Yeah, I think the rotoscoping also turned out to be a problem, which I find strange because he'd already done Waking Life, and that was also using rotoscoping.
I never saw Waking Life, which
me
is,
neither.
I've seen like most of Richard Linklater's films.
Chris is like, what?
Chris is dying. But apparently, I think that's the one.
It was because of the rotoscoping that kept me away again, because I don't like it.
Yeah, I never came into my cinematic, you know.
Like, as a thing that you liked or didn't like?
No, it just wasn't a thing. Like, right. Everybody had seen Waking Life, and I just missed the boat, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that could have been it, too. I did really like Linklater, but I have to admit, I haven't seen very many of his films. I watched Slacker, like, a million times.
I love everything Dazed else. And Confused.
I'm not sure how I feel about
it. I think it's like the 90s American Graffiti.
Sure, yeah. Except it's set in the 70s, right?
Yes. But then American Graffiti was made in the 70s and set in the 50s.
True.
So, yeah, it's...
So it is. Yeah, it is. Exactly what you said. You're right.
I'm right. Rory Cochrane as in this movie, and he was in Dazed and Confused.
Okay, that's a I mean, he plays such a good drug addict.
Well, that's his role thing. But he was also really good in Empire Records.
Oh, yes,
and he was not a drug addict, he was just a troublemaker,
right? Yeah, that's true. He does play other things. Troublemakers and drug addicts. Robert Downey Jr. is very Robert Downey Jr. That's like so much, but good. Like in a really
good
way.
Oh, and him and Winona are back together again from 1969.
This is true.
I didn't think about that.
And then her and Keanu were back together after Dracula.
And just old Woody Harrelson just hanging out on the couch.
Good old Woody,
with the funny hair.
Being pretty Woody too.
Yeah, the scene where he choked. And then, like,
yes.
Oh my God. And then, like, Robert Downey Jr. just kind of like watches.
Yeah.
Like, Keanu is kind of like paranoid because he thinks that, like, Barris or Robert Downey Jr. is like setting up staging situations and where people could easily die.
Right.
And he thinks that that's what he did to Woody. Like he made it so he might choke on his soup or whatever the hell he was eating.
Yeah.
And then, like,
microwave meal or something. Yeah.
And then he did. And then, like, quickly, Robert Downey Jr. is about to call the police and say, you know, we've got a thing here, you know.
The way he phones, though, he's so like, I'm not sure exactly who I need, if it's
casual.
And he's trying to like diagnose it too. Not sure if I could say that it's not cardiac arrest, but it might be. And it's just like, oh my gosh, seriously.
And then Woody wakes up.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, never mind.
It does seem like a delaying tactic, though, too, with all the, like, exposition that he's giving to this 911 operator. And then
it's kind of urgent, and he's just, like, dilly-dallying.
And they're like, what's the address? And he's like, oh, I've never sent myself mail here before, and has to go to the front door and check. And then he's like, is the street name important?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was enjoyable. I enjoyed that part. But yes, my original notes are basically, faces look horrible in this animation. This is distractingly ugly.
it was.
And then later I started to have thoughts about actually what was happening and not just like, Winona's blonde.
They got Robert Downey Jr., like his outfit, his clothes were so annoying and so like... Like druggy dude, but like nerdy druggy dude with the cargo pants and like the, you know, bucket hat occasionally. Like it was just obnoxiously perfect. I don't know.
Isn't he wearing like long johns or something at some point too? I feel like when he's calling 911, he's wearing just like leggings or long johns or something.
Chances are.
I do feel like this movie feels like it's set in the 90s, even though it's made in... like near like 2005, six or whatever. And it is supposed to be set 7 years in the future.
It has 90s vibes for sure.
It really does.
It's just the lack of like technology. Like Keanu has a cell phone, but it's like one of the old ones.
Right.
And I think that's the only, like you don't see much else. There's not really like computer stuff going on. Like there's surveillance, but that's, you know, but in the house that they're living in, there's, you know, I don't even know if there's a TV in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's all the additional surveillance stuff that Robert Downey Jr. set up. So there's a bunch of screens, but they don't seem to work anyway. So I have a lot to say about the animation. So some obvious benefits of the animation is the drug stuff. It really like obvious. It's obvious. I think that that's why he uses this style. Yeah. Like, cause like Waking Life, though we both haven't seen it, I think it's about a dream, like somebody walking through a dream. So drugs, dreams, all of those things
trippy
are easy to show through this style of animation. The bugs.
Yes.
Very easy. Though, honestly, maybe they could have animated, because also rotoscoping, I think, is used for live action stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
just like putting something on top.
There's been, you know, so many movies with bugs. Like, think about, you know, Indiana Jones, To the Craft. You know, there's lots of, you didn't need to do the rotoscoping for bugs.
This is true. But like, when I was reading, because I decided, okay, I'm going to do research on rotoscoping because I don't like it, but I want to know like if other movies were made in it and it may be movies I like or something. And apparently it was used heavily, or maybe not heavily, but used somewhat in Star Wars because it's what's used to make the lightsabers.
Oh.
So it's used to like put animation on top of people.
Okay.
So you can use it in a live action thing. So they could have done
just
the bugs thing.
Being
and
more selective. Yeah.
Exactly.
But nope. Nope. Full on.
Full on. And like in a very, like it's, I think the way he uses it and the fact that it's like this computerized rotoscoping, which I wrote down what that is called. It's a special thing. It's called interpolated rotoscope. Which was actually invented in the 90s, and he's like one of the only people that's used it. Well, no, maybe that's not true, but he is the first person to use it for a full-length film. So Waking Life was the first full-length digital rotoscoping film.
Okay.
But like lots of other people used it to different effect, like to actual animated looking effect, whereas this is like trying to look real, but in like
know
a dreamscape-y way.
Right.
And it's kind of, that's what I don't like about
it. Like a comic book, but like not quite.
Yeah, like a poorly illustrated
When did that movie Sin City come out? Was that a... Was that anything?
I wonder if they used it for it, but like, because that's real people, but it's like really saturated colors stuff.
There's like red.
And there's definitely animation on top, but I've never seen Sin City, so I can't picture it, but I can picture like the ads. But yes, when I was reading about, I didn't realize that Max Fleischer is the one who developed rotoscoping as a technique.
Oh.
He's like the guy who did like Betty Boop and Popeye and Superman.
Cool.
Like cartoons and stuff.
Nice.
So like that stuff, if that stuff was rotoscoped, it is very cartoon looking. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's other stuff of his that was, but so yeah, it's been around since the late 1910s.
Okay.
This stuff. So like lots of people have used it. Apparently Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was made using it. So again, that's like straight up animation looking, but they, I guess, used it for the motion. So they used people to capture the motion.
Oh,
and also back then it wasn't this digital interpolated rotoscope. So it was like a piece of glass that you were like looking at stuff on, and then you drew over top of it.
Oh, so
you could like get, and then like it was like still cells, I guess, that they were using to animate. So they were drawing the cells on top of like, so they got the motion, I guess, from real people. So that to me seems like a good use of rotoscoping. It was apparently also used to remove the chunk of cocaine from Neil Young's nose in The Last Waltz. Apparently. That was
okay.
Some trivia that I read. But also, famously the Aha video, Take On Me. That's rotoscoped. And that's more like this style, but like painstakingly, like I feel like more, I don't know, it's shaky, but like on purpose, but like I don't know, I feel like it just looks better than this looks like messy or something.
It does look messy, but also it's, I think, also because the story was very like kind of boring, like they didn't really anywhere, like they were just these dudes in the house, back to Keanu, back to the dudes in the house, back to the office, back to the dudes in the, like really they didn't nothing really. The whole movie was that.
I think we're back to the adaptation problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're adapting a book that, it's a science fiction book, so there's so much going on, certainly. Like, I've had trouble reading Philip K. Dick stuff. And, like, I've seen Blade Runner. I don't know, 10, at least 10 times. And every time I watch it, I have to ask Matt, like, why is this happening? Like, there's parts that I still don't understand.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it so many times and it's still, like, you know, beyond me, but...
So I feel like anything to do with him, like, there's so much going on that, like, and that's why I think the first time I watched this through, I was also, like, trying to write notes about what I was thinking, distracted by the rotoscoping, so much going on. I ended it and I was like, I don't even know what to say because I don't know that I know what I just watched at all. And then I watched it a second time and I was like, this makes so much more sense. Now that I get that this is like a science fiction thing, because I don't know why I didn't get that from just the suit that they're wearing as like cops, that they're wearing this like weird.
Yeah.
But I just thought, this is just some weird technique they're using to like fight drugs. Like, even though it's 7 years in the future, I don't know. Somehow I could not catch that this was a science fiction until it said Philip K. Dick. And I was like, oh, this is science fiction.
Substance D made me.
That gave it away to you? Yeah, that was
such a sci-fi name.
You're right.
Substance D.
Yeah, it really is.
One of the Winona's first line, she calls some dude the fucker, and I thought that was funny. She's like, she's driving a convertible, talking on a cell phone. She's like, oh yeah, the fucker didn't give you my money or something like that. I was like, okay.
Yeah, starting I did strong. Like Winona in this. Yeah. I mean, I didn't love that it turned out that she's, you know, basically making people take drugs and blow their
brains.
But she felt bad about it. So she's maybe somewhat.
I don't think she's. Well, she's not going to do it anymore. She said she can't do it anymore.
Gotta she's got to get out. She can't sleep at night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. what I was going to say, sorry, I'm just going to keep jumping back to what I know about rotoscoping now that I did all this research. But no, what I was going to say about the movie itself and the use of the rotoscoping is it seems like this took like twice as long as they thought it would to do the animation. And it was because like when the deadline came, the animators were still learning how to use it. And so I feel like that explains a lot when you're watching this. The fact that people didn't know what they were doing. And some people got like fired and they hired new people. Oh, like God. All this stuff happens. So it seems.
Yeah,
like
I read actually
clear.
The post production took like a very long time to complete.
A year or something. Yeah.
They're like, how do you want this to look? Probably like freaking out about everything.
Right.
Because I don't know.
And I think he went off and made another movie. Bad News Bears, I think he made while this was happening.
A remake?
So, yeah. I felt glad to know that I am not the only one who feels like not good about rotoscoping.
Yeah, no, it wasn't pleasing. It's not it's not pleasant to watch. I was like, oh, do I have to like actually watch it or can I just listen?
Right.
Because it's really distracting for your eyes.
And it made me unhappy because I just knew that like Winona and Keanu, like everybody in the cast really was doing a great job. I felt that it's like, you guys are doing a good job. I'm liking your acting at least, even if I'm not loving the story or whatever's happening. I felt like the dynamic between them when they had like buddy moments or whatever, I was enjoying.
Yeah.
But the animation made it distracting and not as enjoyable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like I think it would have been way more enjoyable without that.
Mm-hmm.
And those scenes, like, yeah, when they're just chilling out in the house, it just feels like you're not getting it all or something, you know what I mean? Because it's so washed. Everything just kind of almost washed over, and you have this filter over everything, so you don't really get a sense of what's actually going on. But maybe that's the whole idea, because they're all on the drugs, and you're supposed to be on the drugs, too.
Right. I think that is it, but I just don't like it.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Because I think there's a moment, too, like, okay, maybe we need to talk about the relationship between Keanu and Winona because it's problematic, I think, a bit. But there's a moment where he's walking out of her house and she runs after him and like her whole house looks like it kind of like gets smaller or disappears behind her or something while she's like running after him. And it's just like there's things like that where the background and the person or the object that's like in the foreground don't like match in ways. Which I think is maybe just inexperienced people or like, maybe it's on purpose, but it could also just be lazy, animation. One or the other.
Yeah, that scene though, where like Keanu wants some and Winona says no, he's like such a piece of shit.
He is. Yes. Wow.
He was just like, he's like, I'm going to go then. And
her, what yeah, he's like, fuck it.
Fuck it. Yeah.
And then gets up. And because she says like, no, oh, like he just, I mean, he just says, can I hug you? I want to hug you.
And then she's like, I don't like to be touched when I've had a lot of cocaine or whatever. Because yes, exactly. They had just done a lot of cocaine.
She doesn't,
you know, want to be touched. She says it a few times.
Yes.
And then she feels bad and runs out to him and says, I'm sorry, you know. But I don't like to be touched because I was like,
and he says, fuck it, because I don't know if the guys are bugging him that he's not like, they keep saying she doesn't put out, which I'm also like, wow, I forgot about
whole,
that terminology.
Yeah, that whole
like,
theme about her not putting like out. That. Yeah.
Because there's a whole conversation that's had about it before I even realize what their characters' names are and don't even know who they're talking about. Robert Downey Jr. and the guy who I said is really good at playing a druggie.
Rory Cochrane.
Yeah. They're having a conversation in a diner about how those, like, Keanu and Winona are maybe boyfriend, girlfriend.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And that, oh, but she doesn't put out. And then he's like, oh, I can't believe she doesn't put out. And then doesn't Robert Downey Jr. say something like, oh, she would if she was handled right. And then he says, like, I guarantee I could, like, for $3, I could, like, get you to sleep with, like, or her to sleep with you or whatever. And he's like, I don't want to. She's my friend's girl or whatever. And I'm just like, really? That's why? Like, oh, my God. Like, I'm just so frustrated with these
repulsive guys. Yeah.
So I feel like, does Keanu, like, does he personally feel like, are we in a relationship? Is that why he's upset? Or is he upset because his buds are going like, you're not getting any from her?
Probably. It's probably like the peer pressure of his buds. It's toxic masculinity.
Yes, very much. Very much of that is happening in this. But also like,
bad.
I think I read maybe a review or maybe just like a description of this that said it's questionable whether there's a real relationship there either. Like, is she knowingly in a relationship with him or is she just hanging out?
Like, yeah, I thought they were just like hanging out. And anyway,
it's like, oh boy.
And, you know, she's his boss.
Well, yeah. he doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that, but still.
But she does, I think. So, yeah. She says no.
She says no.
She does say no.
That's all there is to it.
Exactly. Straight up. A weird thing I didn't realize about this movie until I was reading about it is that Alex Jones is in it.
Who's that?
The InfoWars guy.
I don't know what.
So, yeah, he's conspiracy theorist guy. And he's a Sandy Hook denier and various things like that, which is gross. And he's the guy who's on the megaphone when, like, Keanu's walking down the street and then there's a guy yelling about,
and they get him.
Substance D, and then the cops come and, like, take him away.
Mm-hmm.
That's Alex Jones.
That's funny because he's being one of those guys.
Yeah.
Street preacher.
He's apparently also in Waking Life.
Oh.
Why? I don't know why.
Now that makes sense.
Uh-huh. So it's like, does Linklater like him? Like, I don't know what this means that he's in two of his movies.
I don't know about Richard Linklater anymore.
No?
No.
Is that why? Or like in general?
Just in general.
Right.
These Before Sunrise and After Midnight or whatever.
See, those I haven't seen.
They're no good.
Agreed.
They're no good.
Okay, why? I want to talk about this.
Yeah, it's it's a lot of, it's on the nose dialogue. It's so contrived. It's boring. Nobody wants to see these two white people have, like, they're not interesting. I don't know. There's nothing interesting. They're walking around New York. They're just like little privileged pieces of shit. I don't know. I don't really.
I love it. I love this.
I don't care.
No,
it does nothing for me.
I haven't seen it, so I honestly don't know. And the reason I haven't seen it is because the first one, it's Before Sunrise, right? Is the first one, has never been on Netflix. The other ones have, and I'm like, I can't start.
It's like,
with the later one.
It's like movie for jocks to feel emotional. That's what I, like, see it as.
Oh, that's gross. I don't want to see that.
I don't know. I, like, just... Maybe that's a bad description, but, like, it's just one of those, like, ugh. Mm-hmm. These type of people will like this movie. And I ain't that type. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's harsh, but oh well.
No.
It's fair.
It's fine. There is a nudity shot with Winona in this, which probably is not Winona. Does she do nudity?
I don't know. I mean, her boobs are in this, but I don't know if it's...
But I mean in other movies. Oh, has she movies. Does she ever do boobs? Do we ever see her boobs in other movies? This is a weird conversation that I've just started, but I need to know.
In Girl Interrupted, you don't see her boobs, per uh-huh. se, but she is in the tub with...
Right.
You know,
right.
with Whoopi.
Yeah. But I mean, I just, for some reason, I felt about her that she was a person who maybe had a clause, like, I don't do nudity. Oh. But I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think she's ever, it's never...
I hope
she's never had a scene and we're...
Well, yeah.
Maybe she has had scenes, but I guess she's never nude. Yeah. Maybe
she's a never nude. That's what they call it.
That's what they call it. Yeah.
That's where they got it from for yeah. Arrested Development. Yeah. It's a movie term. Well, so I was thinking that was a thing about her because I thought, I don't think we've seen her do nudity. Yeah. So I thought maybe that was a thing, that she doesn't do nudity. And then I was like, I bet that's not actually naked Winona. Like,
probably not.
It's a drawing of a yeah, naked person.
Exactly.
With Winona's face. Yeah. That also was a weird scene because that girl's like, are you gay? And he's like, I try not to be. That's why I called you here tonight. And I'm like, what is this even? Yeah. And then she just keeps talking about how she's going to turn him not gay and all this stuff. And I'm just like, what is even? What is even this dialogue? I try not Maybe to that's be. From the book. I don't
it
know.
It must
you know?
Be. Because like, yeah, it's such yeah, a weird yeah, yeah. thing to say. Right. I try not to be.
I try not to be.
Okay.
When the movie started... I totally obviously didn't read the stuff on the screen because I didn't notice it was a Philip K. Dick book. But also, it said that it was from Warner Independent Pictures, which I was like, I didn't know much about Warner Independent Pictures. But also, like, Matt just kind of said, like, isn't that an oxymoron? Like, Warner doing independent pictures. But so I looked it up and apparently it folded in 2008. So a few years after this.
Ooh.
And the first film was Before Sunset.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And the last film was Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh.
There you go.
Curious.
All under $20 million films. That was the that's what's why made it's independent. Yeah.
By Warner. Where it's like, we're not going to do this, but our Warner Independent will do it.
Yeah. I have a few more notes. I don't know if you have more notes.
I'm looking at like seeing what awards it won. But
it won things?
No, weird things. The yeah. Stinker's Bad Movie Awards. Okay, there it is.
I think it got good reviews, though.
The Toronto Film Critics Association Awards. It was Best Animated Film nominee.
Okay.
Fine.
Fine. I'll allow it to be nominated.
This doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't. I wrote down that Robert Downey Jr. is channeling Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yes, totally.
I think it's the speed at which he talks and the, like, weird jitteriness of the way he talks.
Yep.
That is Goldblum-esque.
Yeah, you could have cast Goldblum into that role and it would have been better. Or fine. Sorry.
Well, I mean, Robert Downey Jr.
He was
good. Is good.
He's good. It's fine. But, you know,
I know.
I prefer Jeff Goldblum in general.
Sure. So. Yes, in general, I do as well.
He's an option.
Yeah, if he's an option, let's go that way. I think Robert Downey Jr. said this in, like, I don't know in what context. He was mad at somebody and he called them an albino shape-shifting lizard bitches. Maybe not A. He called them albino shape-shifting lizard bitches.
Wow.
So there you go. That was just something that I wrote down. that was weird.
Freck. That's the name of Rory Cochrane.
Freck. Yes. And yeah, I don't really know what happened to him. There was a whole scene which seemed like a weird thing that comes up in adaptations where they just like take something that happens in the book. Because lots of asides happen in books that don't usually make it into adaptations. And this was like a weird aside where like the radio was narrating his story, like of him killing himself.
Yes, but he doesn't actually kill himself.
But he doesn't.
I guess he ends up at the New Hope place.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's not New Hope. That's the name of a Star Wars movie.
I don't remember what it's called either.
Yeah.
But yes, the place that manufactures the drugs, but poses as a rehab clinic. He does end up there. And that's the only indication that he lived. Though I don't think the first time I watched it, I realized that it kind of tries to say that he died, because it says that he like was cursed for eternity to listen to his life story and all the mistakes he made or something. And there's
but I think because he took so many drugs, that's what he thought that's what death was.
Yeah. So he wasn't doing it for millions of years. He was just like hallucinating and laying in his bed. Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Hallucinating his death, basically.
Wearing a suit, holding Anne Rand's the fountainhead.
And drinking a fancy wine.
And yes, he threw away the like cheap wine and threw it across the room. Wow. There's just a whole lot of things. Winona drives again in this, which is nice. I don't know. Well, I enjoy her driving.
It's true. She drives in Rally Bites.
Mm-hmm. Night on Earth.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
She's, she's got some good driving
skills.
Scenes.
Yep. She drives Keanu around a couple of times.
Yep.
It's great. Yeah. I think I was liking their relationship until that part happened where he was like, fuck it, and walked away.
Yeah, that just spoiled the whole thing, didn't it?
It did. It really did. Cool.
Yeah. There's one scene like at the beginning, this is nothing, but Keanu is taking off his changey suit and then he kicks and catches it.
Yes.
He does the kick and catch, which I think is very nice because that's, I never see that in movies, but it's a realistic thing. People kick and catch all the time. But anyway,
I noticed that scene each time that I watched it too.
Really?
But my takeaway was the animation looked weird in that moment. Because I feel like watching him kick and catch would be great. It would be realistic and fine. But for some reason, the thing floating just looked weird.
No, yeah, it looked like there is a filter on them. Yeah, you couldn't really see what's happening. But he did kick and catch.
Yes, he did. It was good. I love that you like that. I like little moments like that, too. That's what makes movies fun.
Yeah, that was Scanner Darkly. I don't know. I'm not going to ever watch that again, but...
either. I'm glad I watched it twice because I really liked it better the second time.
Same. I definitely understood it the second time. Mm-hmm. The first one I only remembered the bugs.
Yeah. but no, I probably don't need to watch it again. But I think this is better than some of the stuff we watched really recently.
Yep.
So that's something. Can I tell a story before we end? So in 2003, we didn't have a movie, did we? I think that's why I missed talking about this.
That's correct. She wasn't. Yeah, she
wasn't in stuff, and that was because I guess that was around the.
Yeah, it was two years after the shoplifting period.
So that was the year that I was mistaken for Winona Ryder at a restaurant.
Oh.
So. I was at Gorilla Monsoon. I don't know if you guys remember Gorilla Monsoon. Did you guys live in Toronto in 2003?
No. No.
So there was a restaurant, I think, right next door to the Horseshoe. And it was called Gorilla Monsoon. And it was kind of like, I don't know, they had like
quesadillas
and stuff. I don't know what they had. In any case, I will say this. It was a darkish restaurant. But we were in there and it was really around TIFF. I think it was... probably narrow. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds right. And it had like booths. Anyway, too much information for everyone else. But anyways, we were in this restaurant called Gorilla Monsoon and it was around TIFF in 2003. And the waitress, like, I don't know, came over to take our order or something. And then she said, "I'm really sorry, but are you an Winona Ryder?"
Oh my God.
And I immediately was like, no. And then Matt said, "Yeah, she's in town for TIFF." And then the lady was like, whatever, and went away. And like, I thought, okay, now she thinks I'm bitchy Winona Ryder. Yeah. He was like, "No, I'm not Winona Ryder." And then he's telling her the truth. And then, but I was like, I don't know what she thinks, but maybe she thinks I'm terrible because I didn't like nicely say no. I was just like caught off guard. Yeah. So I was kind of like, no. And then when we got up to leave, she's like, "Have a great time at TIFF." So then I was like, no, she really thinks she just served an underwriter.
That's so funny.
So I wonder if she's out there. And she's been telling her friends all these years that she once met an underwriter. But it was me. It was just me.
I've looked for Winona at TIFF, but...
never found her?
Well, maybe I did. I have a couple stories, but I'll save those for when we get to those movies.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
That's some very sad stories, but they're stories nonetheless.
But it's funny now to look back on this and know that it was during the shoplifting kind of like period. I guess it was after, because what, that was 2001 like, or whatever.
But yeah, but she hadn't really done anything. She did Simone.
Right. But so, yeah, I was in prime. Yeah. I did want that Winona, whatever, free Winona shirt, because everybody said I looked like her. And so I thought, oh, I want that shirt. And Matt had a friend that was like making them in the States and selling them. So Matt was like, send us one for Lindsay. I mean, he just never sent it. Wow. So I didn't get it. But you had one.
Yeah, I still have it.
Nice.
It's a little small, but I still have it.
Nice. Yeah, if I'd gotten it, it would be small now, too.
I hoard, like, the t-shirts that are too small for me, I still hoard them, like, you know.
Yeah, they have memories.
Someday.
I understand. Speaking of memories, we had an anniversary.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That we also didn't talk about.
Whoops. We've been doing this for over a year.
Yeah.
Over a year.
Sometime earlier in February, yes, we hit our anniversary.
Woohoo!
I can't believe it's been a year.
A year of Winona Pods.
Uh-huh.
Content. Oh, wait. Chris says, hold on
a second.
He's going to get his cowbell, I bet.
You're so right.
Yes, he did.
What do we have to do? Yay. Yeah.
He cowbelled.
Sweet. Anniversary.
Ding, ding.
Yay for us. So, yeah, happy anniversary, yeah. Rekha.
Yeah. So Chris asked me, do you think Winona has ever
heard about this?
And I say no, but, you know, maybe, but maybe.
No, but maybe. Yeah, I have no idea. Like,
she doesn't.
Famous people who aren't on social media, I have no idea what they know.
But what I've noticed is that more and more celebrities are going on the Instagram now, and they're all like getting up on the social media. Like Julia Roberts is posting selfies, and like Naomi Watts has a whole thing with her children, and she's just like a mom. Like they're all posting. Like they're all like really up on the social media. Winona is still very absent from it.
Yes. So
I think she'll stay that way, but...
Yeah, sorry. You're like, we almost went an episode without mentioning Nicolas Cage. Sorry.
Yeah, she's nothing.
Yeah.
No social media presence.
Yeah. Yeah. It must be
liberating. I wish I could have no... I got rid of my Facebook, actually.
I know. I realized that when I was wishing us happy anniversary. And I was like, I can't tag Rekha. Oh, right. She left.
Yeah. I just took a break. But
it's okay. It's all right. Happy anniversary.
Yes. Happy anniversary. In person.
Yeah. Okay. So now we could talk about what the next movie is. It's what? The 10?
What? Oof. I've never heard of this.
What?
The 10?
We watched the trailer last week, didn't we?
No. We watched the trailer for something that's like way in the future.
What is this?
Yeah, this is a really wacky cast, guys.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
The 10.
This sounds exciting.
It looks like one
Paul
of those.
Paul Rudd, Adam Brody, whoa. Seth Rogen. Or no, what is his name? Seth Cohen. John Hamm? What? I didn't know Winona and John
Hamm. All the
Hamm
comedians.
Together.
All the comedians
Ken
are in
Marino.
This.
This is so fun.
That does look like it could be fun.
This could be something.
Though we felt that might be true about the Darwin Awards,
yeah,
and that
did.
Wasn't. So we never know.
Shoot,
but you know what? The cover of the 10 makes it look like one of those like spoof movies.
Yeah, like Wet Hot American Summer style.
Well,
with this guy in it.
Yeah, I guess. I'd rather it be Wet Hot American Summer. I'm talking about spoof movies like those, like, I Know What You Did Last Tuesday at the whatever. You know what I mean? Like, the ones that splice together all the movie titles.
Oh, it's the director of Wet Hot American Summer.
Well, then this will be good.
Hello.
Why have we not?
Oliver Platt. Liev Schreiber. Naomi Watts' husband.
Do you know what I mean by the spoof movies? Why are you guys?
Yeah
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. David Wayne. That's great.
Hello.
Am looking forward to this one. It better not let me down.
I
think it'll be fun. So that's good. I'm glad we have something to look forward to.
Yes.
Yay. Sweet.
Okay.
All right. We'll watch it. Come watch it and then tune in 2 weeks.
Yeah, stay tuned. I don't know. No. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, tune in.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Winona Forever is part of the Cage Club Podcast Network. Episodes produced by Chris Landry. Music by No Refunds. Hosted by Lindsay Gibb and Rekha Tulsaram. Contact Rekha and Lindsay at winona@cageclub.me.